Ever since the earliest days of the Folies Bergère, sex, or at least sex appeal, has been one of the ways Las Vegas has made money, and it still happens. The nightclubs in all the big casinos have become cash machines, selling reserve tables and bottle service, say, a bottle of Grey Goose vodka for $1,000 or more. But the clubs that can charge big prices have to maintain a mystique, a sexy mystique. And how they do that was laid bare last week when a series of emails was published between a nightclub host and a woman seeking comps for a bachelorette party she was organizing. That woman has remained anonymous, but she joins us now. Zoe, welcome to KNPR.
Thank you so much for having me.
You were obviously familiar with the system of securing comps and knew this nightclub host. Do you think you were asking for anything extraordinary when you asked for a table of 15 to be comped?
I don't. And the reason is this. I live in Southern California. I've lived here for many years. And throughout the years, I have gone to Vegas with my friends for bachelorette parties, birthday parties, you name it. But we have frequently gone in large groups. And typically, we have reached out to promoters to see what they can do for the group. And that conversation, at least for us, usually starts with a request if it's possible, whether or not they can comp us a table. Sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes, you know, all the tables are sold already for that evening. You know, it depends on the time of year, really who's playing that night at the club, what club you want to go to. But, you know, what was different about this conversation is those other conversations usually evolve a little bit more into, well, there might not be a comp available, but here's what we can do for you. Here, we can give you this sort of a deal, or, you know, we can give you open bar, or we can comp you for a certain number of hours until we sell the table. But this conversation didn't go that way. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, to answer your question, that I was asking for anything extraordinary. I think it's something that is typically done. Because that's just how the system works, at least is how we understood that it worked.
Had you been able to secure something like this before?
Yes, mm-hmm. A number of times. Most times, actually.
Mm. Had you ever been asked for photos before?
I had never been asked for photos before. No, that was something new.
Why do you think that you were asked for photos of everyone in the party this time out?
You know, I believe that that's, at least it was represented to me in the text conversation that was the policy of that particular club. Now, I've never been to this particular club, and I can't speak as to whether that is a true policy of theirs or not. I can just assume that it was, since that's what it was represented as. So I do believe that they wanted to see how the group looked, and if the group's looks met their standards, then they would go ahead and comp the table.
Hmm. So when you were asked to provide photos or Instagram accounts for everyone in the party, I mean, how did you react that first time?
Well, what I told this individual was, first of all, I'm with 15 girls in bachelorette party, and it is not uncommon that you don't know everybody in the bachelorette party if you're organizing it. So that was not untrue. I did not have access to photos of all 15 girls. I didn't have a picture of all 15 girls together. So that was my initial reaction. It was kind of one of surprise, but also logistically, I can't do this and I don't feel like doing this. I to be quite honest, I didn't have the time to sit there and do it if I wanted to. But, you know, I was somewhat taken aback that was what was going to be required to give us a comp. And, you know, I wouldn't have done it anyway, even if I had the logistical capability of doing so.
And when you refused to do so, the host replied to you saying Haka-san did not want what the host called quails and hippos to be comped. How did you feel when you read that email?
You know, I found it to be very offensive, and I think it was outrageous, especially because this is an individual. This isn't a conversation with just an individual outside of a nightclub. This is somebody I was connected to who was a VIP host, somebody who is employed by this club as a promoter to promote their business. And so really I was shocked. I was baffled that's, you know, what was being said to me as a potential customer.
You were organizing a bachelorette party, so you didn't even know all the guests, as you said, and it made gathering photos impractical. Were it a smaller party, would you have sent the photos? Or if you knew everybody, would you have sent them?
No, I still wouldn't have sent the pictures. I don't think it's right that an individual like this is going to be empowered to value your party's worth, these females' worth, based on how he perceives that each of those individual each of those individuals' attractiveness. Mm-hmm. And so that was what was off-putting to me, and I know I wouldn't have done it even if I had been able to. Mm.
For those of us who don't know much about this world, when you're negotiating something like this, aren't you trading a little bit, or are you trading a little bit on the promise of maybe youthful good looks by talking about things like comps, in this case for a table of 15?
I don't think that that is uncommon. I do think that that is something that is typically done. And for me, the outrage that I felt was less at the policy, which has some greater issues in and of itself. But my outrage was less about the policy than it was about how he was speaking to me.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the clubs apply the same sort of standard to men? Do they want only good-looking men or famous men like actors or athletes?
No, I don't think that that's the case at all. Like I said, I think the policy is the subject or could be the subject of greater discussion. I do think that different standards are applied to men and women. You can see in the policy itself that men are required to pay $4,000, but no group photo is required. And even if a group of men sent in a group photo and all of the men were good looking, I don't think that they would be getting a free table from the promoters or the club itself. And that's not the case for women, according to the policy that I saw.
I'm guessing from the tone of the nature of the email correspondence that you passed on Haka-san. Did you get a comp someplace else?
We did. We did end up with an offer of a comp someplace else at a different club. We did not go to Haka-san. You know, we were there for two nights. Something that came up, at least in what I was reading the responses online, was that there seemed to be sort of a sense of entitlement in even asking for a comp. And I think you and I discussed this a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. But we were, and I just wanted to clarify that, we were not unwilling to pay for a table. I mean, this reaching out to Haka-san was one of many different clubs we reached out to secure kind of the best deal that we could for our group. We weren't interested, you know, we weren't married to the idea of going to Haka-san. We just wanted to have a good time. We wanted to dance and have a good time. And so we reached out to see what the best deal would be. And for us, though we were able to secure a comp at another club, we actually ended up paying for a table on the first night, because the deal with the comp sometimes is that you are given, you know, one bottle, and then if you don't buy more bottles, you will lose your table. And for us, the deal ended up being better to just purchase the table. And so we did end up doing that the first night, and the second night we ended up with a comp. So it wasn't something that we were unwilling to do. It wasn't something that we felt entitled to. It was really just the beginning of what I felt was going to be some sort of a negotiation to figure out what the best deal would be, but it didn't go that way at all.
So what do you think is the moral of your story? Does it have a larger significance?
You know, I do think it has a larger significance. To be honest with you, at the time I was having the conversation, and at the time I even sent the conversation into Jezebel, I, you know, wasn't aware that it was going to spark, you know, such a large response. But I am glad that it did, because I think it's brought up a lot of bigger issues that people are now discussing. Hopefully these clubs will look into whether it's their policies that create this sense of empowerment amongst these promoters, that they can behave this way and speak to women this way. And I'm glad that this discussion has been sparked and that those issues will be more closely examined.
Zoe had a run-in recently with the nightclub host for Haka-san, who refused to comp a bachelorette party she was organizing when she would not provide photographs. The host told her the club did not comp, quoting, whales and hippos. Zoe, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we should also note that we have reached out to Haka-san and have not heard back from them about this story. Now, Zoe says she's pleased that this episode of Haka-san has generated discussion, but what is its significance? Is this just the way clubs operate? Is this just one of those things that everyone knows? And how pervasive is this problem in Las Vegas? Does a service economy make us all too conscious of physical appearance at the expense of other values? Well, joining us now to talk about these questions and others is Erin Gloria Ryan. She is the news editor of Jezebel and posted the original email exchange between Zoe and the Haka-san host. Erin, welcome to KNPR.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You were obviously outraged about this exchange. On the other hand, isn't this the way life works? Attractive or smarter or more talented people sometimes just get more chances in life?
Well, I wouldn't say I was outraged by the fact that clubs give preference to good-looking people, because that's just kind of how they work. The thing to me that was noteworthy about the exchange was that this time the veil was pulled back, and the club promoter was really, really rude about kind of continuing to push this narrative on Zoe, even after she was kind of done hearing it. He insisted on telling her, no, you know, we don't let whales and hippos in. That's not what Hakkasan is about. And this was well after she'd been like, okay, thank you, I'll go somewhere else, it's fine, goodbye. He just kept lecturing her like she was dumb, like she didn't know how things work. I would say that that's sort of why I don't go to clubs and why I think they're kind of gross, but I wouldn't say that I was surprised that that goes on. I just was surprised by how blatant it was in this case.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, again, isn't this one of those things where the attractive or the smarter or the more beautiful among us get to the front of the line in this particular area of entertainment?
Sure. I mean, the thing is, being a good-looking person offers people advantages in almost every aspect of life. People who are good-looking are more likely to get hired for jobs. They're more likely to get treated politely. They're more likely to get people do favors for them. People smile at good-looking people. That's something that is, there's no question about that. But my issue here was that the world doesn't have to work. I think that assuming that people are going to be really rude about the fact that people make those subconscious or conscious judgments, I don't think that's how the world works. I don't think that we necessarily need to accept that and just say, well, that's just how things are.
But on the other hand, isn't this the world of nightclubs since the heyday of Studio 54 more than 30 years ago, where a bouncer looks at you and gives you the thumbs up or the thumbs down? It's totally arbitrary, seemingly. And it sounds like, as you say, the curtain got pulled back in this case. Now, this just sounded like perhaps a moment where somebody was being especially tactless, but right, doing what nightclubs do.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with you. And I think it was really interesting because when I was in my early 20s, I went through a club phase. I went to clubs a lot. And my boyfriend didn't. And he and I were talking about it. And I was kind of explaining to him that you wait in line and then they let you in or they don't let you in. And it was just so alien to him. And if you read the comments on the original story, there are people, there's kind of a divide. There are people that are like, well, this is just how things are. This is just how things are. And then there are people that never really experienced that blatant of, I guess, lookism or preference of beautiful people, and they're just kind of grossed out by it. And I think that even the people that knew how things were sort of grossed out by how blatant and rude it was. And I also think that people that willingly participated in the culture kind of took a little bit of, they were a little kind of gleeful to see one particularly kind of douchey person be exposed for it, kind of caught in the act of treating someone disrespectfully and not thinking that other people would find out. I think that people were actually kind of excited by that.
Now, we've also since learned that the bouncer in question has been suspended by Hakkasan. So do you look at this and see a moment of awakening for the club, or do you see it as a necessary PR move?
Well, actually, he was a promoter. He wasn't a bouncer.
A promoter, sorry.
But I would say that hopefully this will cause people to think about the way that they say things before they say them, and to be just more careful and to be a little bit more, to be tactful. Look, there's no question that it's in a club's best interest as a business entity to fill itself with beautiful people. People want to hang out with the beautiful people. That's what nightclubs are. I get that. But I think that you can have that kind of superficiality and also not be a jerk about it, if that makes any sense. And actually, I couldn't hear the portion where Zoe spoke with you, but Zoe told me that when she was in Vegas this past weekend, promoters were a lot more polite than they had been in the past, because I think that they took this as a warning. You can't be rude. Just because that club policy is kind of unfair and superficial doesn't give you license to be rude to people and treat them disrespectfully.
So are you concerned about the superficiality of it, or would you be more concerned maybe that it's superficial and completely tactless at the same time?
I think that the tactlessness was I think tactlessness is something that's a little bit easier to address in the short term, and I think superficiality is sort of a pipe dream than something that can't necessarily just be fixed by one promoter being exposed for being too but for being rude and superficial. So I think that, you know, club culture, like I said, a lot of people go through club phases. A lot of people like going to nightclubs. A lot of people like the superficial aspects of them. A lot of people like dressing up and looking good and being around other people that have dressed up and look good. And that's fine, but I just don't think that we need to be jerks about it.
We are talking with Erin Gloria Ryan, who is the news editor at Jezebel. She posted the original email exchange between Zoe and the hosts at Hakkasan, which started this whole kerfuffle. Now, we are also joined by E.C. Gladstone. He is a travel writer and food critic based in Las Vegas. He's written for a number of national and local publications. Eric, welcome back to KNPR.
Lovely to be here again. Thanks for having me.
Do you feel a sense of outrage at the way this whole thing unfolded, the way the Hakkasan host treated Zoe and her party?
Well, I have a number of different feelings about the issue. It's really interesting to have had it revealed in this way, and I find myself defending the club's point of view, and in other elements, attacking it. A number of different feelings. I feel that we should backtrack just a second and point out that the issue that we're talking about at hand is the fact that getting a table at a nightclub of this nature, for people who don't know, is an exchange of a value of thousands of dollars. Which may sound absurd to someone who isn't in this world, that if you want a place to sit down while you're at this nightclub, you will have to exchange hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars on the surface to get a bottle of liquor that would probably cost $30 or $40 of retail. So I think it's important for people to know that this is a high-value exchange here, and that bachelorette parties or groups of women who are asking this, you know, there is a high-value exchange going on here.
Isn't this a rehashing of junior high school in some ways? I mean, you're in.
Isn't everything in Vegas?
Well, touche. You know, you're in.
Yes.
You're out. You're in. You're out. And all of you better have a whole lot of money. But, you know, beyond that, all the superficial reasons in the world, you know, here's why you get in, here's why you don't get in.
Right. Well, this is why I find myself defending the club, because it is a private club. They have the right to say whatever environment they want to create and really who they let in. I think what's interesting to me about this, the sort of outrage behind this, if I read the text message exchange correctly, he was offering to let the group in for free. They could come to the event for free, which is fantastic, and he would get them in. He just wasn't getting them a table for free, including liquor. He wasn't offering that without them showing their photographs and proving to them that they were of physical value to him.
I guess with the whole thing of you have to show us your photographs first, so we know, and then the terms, you know, no whales or et cetera, et cetera. Isn't there something fundamentally just awful about that, sexist about letting women in depending on their looks, but then expecting men to pay cover charge, tip the doorman, go for the bottle service
absolutely.
And rack up the big charges?
It's beyond sexist. It's terrible. It's terrible that sort of one sex is used to lure the other, because at the end of the day, that is what it is. It's all about money. It is all about that revenue, and just it's almost absurd the perception that if we let all these women in, the men will come with their money, you know? I mean, that in itself saddens me, to tell you the truth, but that's the way it seems to function and function incredibly well. Although, you know, the nightclub world is incredibly high pressure, and these guys like this host, who I don't know him, but I don't think he's probably that uncommon. They're very young guys. They don't have a lot of training, and they have an immense amount of pressure on them. And I even have it sort of on good authority that Hakkasan does operate in this way, and that these hosts will even be reprimanded if someone in the party shows up and isn't of, you know, physical.
So is that where the pressure is? You better have a great eye for beauty.
I suppose so, which I'm sure is, you know, I'm not sure what the job requirements are of being a host, but, you know, sort of being a model scout is probably not really one of them.
Have you talked to some of these folks?
I'm I'm sure. I'm friendly with some people who are in that field. Absolutely.
Are they breaking into cold sweats at the sight of, you know, eyeing the line and saying, I've got to figure out who I'm going to let in and who I'm not?
I don't know if they physically do that. And it's not a line situation the way it was back in the day of Studio 54 in that era. It's a slightly more sophisticated, but it's an extremely high-pressure job, I can tell you that.
We're talking about the response one woman got when she sought a comped table for a bachelorette party at Hakkasan. The host told her that the club did not want, in his words, whales and hippos at the club. That the host has since been suspended by Hakkasan. And we're wondering about your experience. Have you attempted to get into a club like Hakkasan or one of the many other clubs of that sort in Las Vegas and been discriminated against because of your physical appearance? On the other hand, has your physical appearance worked to your advantage? And what do you make of this in a tourist economy, a service economy? Is an emphasis on good looks inevitable? Or does it mean we're incapable of getting under the surface and getting beyond the most superficial manners? We'd like to know what you think of all of this. Call us now at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. You can also write us at knprnews.org. That's knprnews.org. I want to bring in Brian right now. Brian is a former club employee. And Brian, welcome to the show. Thanks for letting us visit with you. Tell us about your experience. Was the experience as high pressured as E.C. Gladstone was saying?
Well, I used to work security, but I wasn't actually on the floor. I actually observed everything through the cameras in the club.
So, what did you see as you looked out there?
Basically, you know, the club they tend to kowtow to the high roller patrons. One such example, I'm not going to say which club I worked at, because honestly, I think they all do this. And one example was on my boss's desk. It was just laying out. I didn't, like, rifle through it or anything, but I saw an email that was taped to his monitor that said, what to do when you see unattractive patrons at nearby a high roller's table. And it mentioned that you need to, you know, have them back away, and then replace these so-called unattractive patrons with club models or dancers that are hired by the club.
Yeah, so it was a whole checklist. Here's how you isolate them or usher them out.
Exactly.
What did you make of that when you saw that? Did you just kind of think, it's about right. That sounds like a par for the course.
Yeah, pretty much. I just rolled my eyes.
Yeah. What do you make of policies like this, Brian? I mean, is it the were you just kind of uncomfortable knowing that that's the atmosphere in which you worked?
Yeah, the funny thing is, even though I worked at a club at the time, I've always been an outsider to that culture. I never really went to clubs. I mean, back when I worked there, I went there one time as a patron just to see what it was. And, you know, I just don't like the environment. It's too crowded. Everything's so expensive. You can't hear what anybody's saying.
Yeah, and you're saying, though, I mean, by having seen this sheet, you're saying there was a formal policy of trying to, in effect, remove unattractive people from the club in many cases.
Pretty much. I mean, it's not something you'd see in the handbook. It was just an email from one executive to another.
Now, Aaron, Gloria, Ryan, both you and Zoe were and are certainly aware that clubs are looking for good-looking, well-dressed young women. You wrote on Jezebel's website that Hakkasan was, in your words, a hip club where all the bandage dresses come out to frolic with arms akimbo for photos. Doesn't that really say the patrons of clubs fit in with their expectations and wear short, very tight dresses for a night of clubbing?
Sure. I mean, I think it's probably a self-perpetuating culture, right? I mean, if people go to clubs dressed a certain way, then eventually people just expect everyone to come to clubs dressed a certain way. But at the same time, you know, I don't think that the way that a woman dresses should. I don't think wearing a short, tight dress is relevant at all in whether or not they should be respected, or, you know, or whether or not they should be treated rudely or with tact.
Now, this issue of physical appearance is not restricted just to having a good time on Saturday night. Physical appearance can have, as we've alluded to a little earlier, a large impact on other things, education, job opportunities among them. It can affect career prospects. And that's where Stephanie Johnson comes in. She teaches in the business school at the University of Colorado Denver, and she has researched how good looks and career prospects go together. Stephanie, welcome to KNPR.
Thank you.
As you listen to this conversation, some of the different aspects of the stories, what goes through your mind?
Well, a real lack of surprise, I would say, is the first thing. Yeah. This is an industry where attractiveness is really important and really valued. So I'm not at all surprised. I'm pretty surprised, as I think Zoe said, it's just how blatant this club promoter was and how he really lacked tact. That's a probably a different hiring issue for the club, but I'm not at all surprised that this is the expectation and the norm in this industry.
You have noted in a lot of your studies that attractive-looking people do better in college admissions, get offered better starting salaries, do better in elections, have a host of other advantages. Is this just our unconscious bias as a species that attractive people must be smarter and happier and more honest and so forth?
Yeah, I definitely think it's an unconscious bias. There's even some suggestion that it's an evolutionary advantage or adaptation to seek out more attractive people. They're less likely to have some sort of genetic problem that could be passed along. Yeah. So I don't know. It seems pretty innate in our species.
Yeah, you've also found that being attractive can be a handicap in applying for a job in traditionally male industries like, say, construction. Why is that?
What we found is that people are inferring that attractive women are more feminine, which I guess that makes sense. And so if they're more feminine, they don't have the ability to succeed in that masculine industry. So a construction worker, accountant, industries that are really masculine but don't value attractiveness, then more attractive women are going to be denigrated.
So what about something like this nightclub policy? How often do you run into situations like this where the requirements or the parameters are just put out there so maybe tactlessly, if not so boldly?
Honestly, I've never seen anything like that. That really blew me away. I can't say I'm surprised because I've been to a nightclub and I have experienced that, you know, people get in the line ahead of you, get, you know, what they're going for. But yeah, to put it in an email or a text or whatever it was, I feel like that's pretty shocking because that could be printed in Jezebel, you know, just as it was.
Yeah. Now, some jobs require good looks, runway model, for instance. But should that also be true of club waiters, hosts, people in the hospitality and service industries?
I would say no. I don't see how that's a job requirement, but it's definitely legal to, in most states and most counties, to hire people on the basis of physical attractiveness.
And Eric, you've said, I think, more or less, no as well. You're okay with employers, club owners, restaurant owners, and the like having something of a free hand, right, when it comes to hiring staff?
Am I okay with it philosophically?
Yeah, well.
It's, you know, and, you know, I don't want to paint myself with a political stripe because I'm a moderate, but in many respects, but you know, this is a private club and it's a private world. And I do think that, you know, in this country that they have a right to make certain decisions as long as they apply, you know, go along with the, you know, American Disabilities Act and things like that. But I think that Vegas clubs with the pressure to make money can take these things to extremes as this host, the promoter clearly did. And as perhaps Haka-san has, although that's not verified, you know, I think that they might be taking it to extremes. I don't personally believe that good-looking people necessarily make a better experience in a social environment. You know, that's not my personal belief. I think a mix of people make more interesting things, and I don't think you can predict by looks anything like that. But, you know, I don't make the kind of money they make.
I suppose not. We are talking about the role physical appearance plays in employment and service, and impetus for this conversation resulted from the story which was shared on Jezebel about a woman seeking a comp table for a bachelorette party at Haka-san recently. The host then told her that the club did not want, quoting, whales and hippos at the club, and just used that as justification for asking for photos of all of the women who would have been a part of that bachelorette party. The woman, Zoe, ended up locating a different club for that bachelorette party. And we're wondering what you make of the role physical appearance plays and should play in things like nightclub activity and also maybe in employment and service as well. If you've got some stories, if you've been discriminated against because of your physical appearance, or if physical appearance has worked to your advantage, we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. And you can also write to us at knprnews.org. We are here with E.C. Gladstone, travel writer and food critic. His site's ecgladstone.com. Stephanie Johnson is also with us, professor at the Business School at the University of Colorado at Denver. She's studied this kind of workplace dynamic, if you will. And Erin Gloria Ryan is with us, too, from her office in New York. She is the news editor of Jezebel. We're going to start with Lindsay in Las Vegas. Lindsay, thank you for calling, and welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly.
So I just wanted to just throw out there that I'm a local in Las Vegas. I'm 24. And, I mean, a lot of my friends that come to visit, we go to the clubs, and we like to go. But, I mean, it's very obvious that beauty is a key role in getting in and getting the comp to life because, you know, we'll be waiting in line with my friends, you know, no matter how they look. And always blonde, you know, tall, beautiful woman and their group of friends will be, you know, plucked out of the line to be thrown in first, to be, come get this comp table, come hang out with these guys, you know, come in before us. And, we, you know, it's frustrating because you go in, you know, expecting to have a good time and you realize that you're going in with a complete disadvantage because you're not looking the way that everybody else does or you're not up to a certain standard.
Have you ever thought to yourself, nuts to this, I'm going to find something else to do with friends?
Yeah. Yeah, we actually, you know, actually it happened a couple of times and we just kind of decided that maybe the nightclub wasn't our scene. After a while, and you know, it kind of put a damper on the whole entire feel of going to the club.
Yeah. Lindsay, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Tony joins us from Las Vegas. Tony, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning to your panel and you this morning. I just wanted to say that I've been working in clubs since this. I'm going to give away my age, since the 70s and the 80s in Geneva, Switzerland, and Paris. And this has always been the nature of a nightclub. I remember the club I used to work for in Paris called Madame Regine. If you wanted a table, automatically you knew you had to buy a bottle of Dom Perignon. And this is in the 80s. The only thing I disagree is the approach that this gentleman at Hakkasan had, and not having class, actually, and talking to these young ladies the way they did, the way he did. But, you know, this, I just wanted to say, this is the nature of the nightclub. People shouldn't be surprised that, you know, beautiful people getting first. And it's really, I blame the club, of course, but at the same token, look around you in other areas of life. You know, Victoria's Secret, even men are buying that. And they have nothing to do with that catalog.
Tony,
so,
you ever
at the same token, you know, it's just, you know, you can blame the club, yes, to a certain point, because this gentleman was completely out of line with these young ladies. But at the same token, it's just the kind of society we live in, and nightclub is just a smaller portion of this group. And I thank you, everybody online.
So you don't feel any real moral outrage about this, Tony?
Yep. I do.
You
I
do.
Really do, because I remember when I was a host in a nightclub in Geneva, Switzerland, we really, really didn't go by the look. Even on the merit of your, first of all, how much were you going to spend the money when you were inside the club, and really about your behavior. It's got nothing to do with your weight program or what diet you have, because then this gentleman obviously is a shallower than little pond. You know, and I don't know. I disagree with his mentality. Absolutely.
All right, Tony, thank you very much for your call. 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552. Mike in Las Vegas is next. Mike, thanks for calling and welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly.
You know, I work in the industry here, and a lot of my friends and associates do, and this is really very typical to get into nightclubs and to get comp tables. You really need to have a larger group of attractive girls. That's not unusual. I think what's really unusual is the way that this particular promoter handled things. I think that's a pretty isolated incident. That's not something that I'm familiar with.
Yeah. Is it something where people who would handle this just need a little bit of instruction in diplomacy? Just how to say it nicely or politely? I mean, is that what's missing
here? I don't
even
think it's that. I mean, all promoters get, you know, some training and some common ways to deal with people, but I think this was just one individual that was way out of line, and I don't think you should really read too deeply into this and then say that it's indicative of the entire Las Vegas nightclub scene.
Yeah. Now, we heard a few minutes ago from Brian, who's worked in some clubs in the Strip, that he saw a memo. So it sounds like this may not have been just an isolated incident.
No, I don't think it's an isolated incident that he's trying to get attractive females into the club. I think the insults and the harsh words, that's isolated.
Yeah.
I've never known anybody to call a group of women hippos or whales.
Yeah. All right. Mike, thanks very much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552. Sean in Las Vegas is next. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I've been in the industry almost 30 years. I work for a gentleman's club here in town. I just wanted to say one thing. Vegas is about the experience. When these people come to town, it's about them having a good time and having a great experience. That's like an isolated incident, but most of these promoters out here, they're not even promoters. They're just glorified hounds, and they just want to get whoever's running this, whoever is the marketing director running this, needs to be ashamed of himself, basically.
Yeah. What's missing? I mean, do they need some sensitivity training, or do they just need to switch policies? What's your take on that?
Well, my take on it is, it's not the first time that you help and service a person. It's the next time they come to town when they remember who it was that put them in the right direction to have a great time and a great experience here in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah. All right, Sean, thank you very much for your call. 702-258-3552. 702-258-3552. Jordan's next in Las Vegas. Jordan, welcome to the program.
Hi,
Jordan, you're on the air.
Hey, great. I just want to say, I can't speak too much to the club scene myself. I don't really spend too much time there. But you made a comment earlier about women in construction being discriminated against based on their looks. I just wanted to say that I'd seen that personally. I work construction here in town on the casinos and such. And I've seen a lot. You know, it actually does happen. You know, women are discriminated against because they can't. They're not, oftentimes, especially if they're good looking, they're assumed to not be as physically strong or capable as the other men. But also, I mean, there are guys in construction that are pigs. And if a foreman hires an attractive looking woman, he's got to worry about these guys on his crew that are going to be hitting on this girl and possibly causing a sexual harassment lawsuit, and they don't want anything to do with that, so they'd rather just not hire the attractive girl and not have to worry about it.
Yeah. All right, Jordan, thank you very much for your call. Stephanie Johnson, it seems to me Jordan is getting into an area that you know quite a bit about, but it raises a question, which is how do we draw a line between a job requirement and discrimination? I mean, even if a club owner thinks that, say, all white people would attract more customers, he or she couldn't necessarily refuse to hire or bring in minorities, right?
So where
do we draw that line?
The legal aspect of it, mm-hmm. And that Civil Rights Act. I'm not a lawyer, but I cover this in my classes. So for attractiveness, there's no law to protect unattractive people, but I think where it becomes a legal issue or an employment issue is that this discrimination is often just for attractive women. So in construction, you can be a perfectly attractive male and be hired, but the discrimination is against attractive females, which creates what's called a sex plus case of gender discrimination, in which case it is totally illegal under the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah.
And it would never be possible to say we only hire attractive women, but we will hire unattractive men. It has to be equal across both men and women.
Yeah. So does would a club like Hakkasan be skirting the line legally if that kind of criteria were put out there, perhaps both for employees and for patrons allowed in?
Definitely for employees. For patrons, I mean, I don't know how it is legal, but I mean, clubs do it all the time, obviously, like ladies' night, women get free drinks, men don't. Hey, it's not an employment context. So these employment laws don't apply. But if you said, I think there was a club in New Jersey that they would only hire women who weighed under a certain amount. It was like bartenders or servers had to they made them step on a scale, and that was found to be illegal because they were men who weighed more than that who were hired. So it's not a requirement of the job to be a certain weight, and you can't just impose that on the female employees.
Hmm. So Eric Gladstone, you wanted to add to
that? I just wanted to interject on that point that I've heard many different times that that sort of thing actually does go on in Las Vegas, and I'm not sure. I think that the laws are maybe slightly different in Nevada, basically, compared to New Jersey, but I believe that weigh-ins have happened.
Have you heard about this from people
who've
participated in it?
Who are employees? Yeah. Uh-huh.
But Stephanie Johnson, are you saying that's illegal nationally, or is that illegal on a state by state? It's federal law.
If someone were to file suit, I mean, like I said, I'm not a lawyer, but if someone were to file suit, my guess would be that would not be allowed.
Well,
you
I
can't
note
say that women have to be 110 pounds, but men can be 150. If there's a weight requirement of 110 pounds, both your men and women employees have to be less than 110 pounds. But I've heard of it happening too. So
yeah,
I know
Nevada
occurs, but
clubs in Las Vegas have been subject to many employee discriminatory lawsuits, and I think they've won some and lost some, but it's not uncommon.
We're talking about the role physical appearance plays in employment and service, and also in things like being admitted to clubs such as Hakkasan. A story of being turned away for not providing photos at Hakkasan is what's kind of been a springboard for this conversation. We're talking about what that means for a place like Las Vegas in a tourist service economy such as ours. Is an emphasis on good looks inevitable, or is it indicative of a civilization, if you will, in Southern Nevada, where we're kind of skin deep and not much beyond that? Well, we're talking about that with Erin Gloria Ryan. She is on the phone with us from New York, the news editor of Jezebel, which first published the exchange of emails bringing this story to light. Stephanie Johnson, professor of the business school at the University of Colorado, Denver, and E.C. Gladstone. Eric is a travel writer and food critic, and his site is ecgladstone.com. Eric Gladstone, during the break, you and I were talking about one element of the story that Zoe told, which has kind of brought this whole discussion to the fore. Which was the idea that she was looking to get comped for this table and was looking to kind of be in the club as a part of all this. And
you said
that brings up other issues too.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to get back to that issue of the story that seemed to be sort of brushed over, which is the fact that I think that there is, even from the patron side and particularly from this sort of patron side, this sort of bachelorette party program that goes on, that there are people knowledgeable, as Zoe mentioned, she was experienced in this idea that if you get a group of girls together, you will get a table and liquor for free and preferential treatment. And that there has to be, or there ought to be, some understanding from the patron, from the client side that there's an exchange going on here that these clubs are not charities and they're not, you know, just in business to pay tribute to the sanctity of marriage and celebrate that they are getting something in exchange here. And I thought that Zoe, I don't want to cast too many aspersions, but I thought that Zoe was maybe just a little bit disingenuous about her understanding of how this sort of works.
Mm-hmm. Erin Gloria Ryan, in the exchange of conversation, emails and such with Zoe, did you get a sense that she was fully cognizant of what was going on in this transaction or the attempted transaction?
Yeah, well, you know, that's something that I've been thinking about a lot in the last several days since we posted the story. The fact that that's how things work in clubs, like you get a comp table and then you and your friends are pretty and you hang out there all night. And I think that she was used to it because she was experienced with Vegas clubs. She said she'd been involved in several bachelorette parties in Las Vegas over the years just because she lives in Southern California and it's just kind of a common destination. But what I have found really interesting in kind of the aftermath of this is that people kind of fire back like, oh, this is just how it is. This is how it's always been. This is how it is. It's how it's always been. Like, the status quo is messed up. Everybody agrees that it's messed up. But the status quo becomes the status quo because people just brush it aside and say, this is how it's always been. And what's happened, I think, in club culture is that everybody has just kind of defended it as, this is just how it is, this is just how it is, this is just how it is. And here we are in 2014 with this totally sexist and outdated model of women coming in and being like part of the club atmosphere and then men buy them drinks. I believe Eric pointed out that's really retro and really gross. And it kind of commodifies women in a way that just doesn't make sense in modern society. It doesn't fit in with the way that people are now. Women earn their own money. They don't need things paid for them. Hmm. So I think that what's really interesting here is that people have kind of defended it by saying, oh, this is just how it is and how it's always been. And the reality is the reason it's always been that way is because nobody has challenged it.
Hmm. Our number is 702-258-3552. 258-3552. Alika joins us from Las Vegas. Alika, welcome to the program. And I understand you have worked in the hospitality industry as a host, VIP host.
Good morning. Yes, my name's Anita.
Oh, Anita, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. And yes, I've been for the last 4 years, I've been a VIP host. We get clients who want to go to different venues, and it's my job and responsibility throughout the night to get them into those venues and into their transportation needs. And so I stay with them for the whole night. On one particular event, I had 15 beautiful, bold, larger women from Detroit, and we've been going to clubs all night, and one of our stops were, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but one of the premier nightclubs in town, mm-hmm. not the one that you're talking about specifically now. But
another one.
Mm-hmm. Another one, yeah, premier nightclub. And my company contracts or has agreements with all the clubs that, you know, we get our clients in at a certain time and this is how many we're bringing in, and they're all ladies. We don't tell them because we have no idea, you know, what anybody looks like. They're booking with us, and it doesn't matter what you look like. Sometimes I have folks in a wheelchair that I take in, which I think is fantastic. I love to do things like that. But I have these 15 ladies off on the Detroit area. We got to our spot. I negotiate with the doorman, our contact, and his boss came over and said, I'll let you in, but I'm not going to let them in. And I said, what do you mean? We have we're scheduled to be here. You know, this is all already pre-planned and pre-organized, and they're paying. They're paying, you know, they've already paid us to bring them in here. And he said, well, I'll let you in, but I can't let them in.
Did he tell you why he couldn't let them in?
I kept asking. I asked the ladies, actually, to kind of move out of our here, you know, out of where I was trying to negotiate with them, because they were kind of getting involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want anything really, really inappropriate, because I knew where he was going, because he was looking them up and down and then looking at me. He said, well, you can come in, but they can't. And the reason is now because we're at capacity. That's the reason. And yet I saw him let other people in. So
yeah.
He wouldn't come right out and say why, but he was, you know, the overall feeling was that he wasn't going to let them in because they were larger, but they were dressed very boldly, I guess I would say. But none of that really matters. They were paying patrons, and
So how did
really
you...
a lot of fun. They were really fun. They were bubbly and exciting and energetic, and had a great time. In that
so, Anita, it sounds like you were kind of in the middle of the hurricane on this. How did you end up resolving all of this?
Well, what I had to do was, thank God, I've got contacts in other clubs, and I just told them, because they didn't really get to hear all of the conversation or his looks and such. I just said, you know, they have a special event going on tonight, and they're to capacity, and the people that they're letting in have already, they bought tables, and we don't have a table.
Hmm.
So I told them that, and then I found another alternative club kind of at the same level that I could take them into, and that happily took them without, you know, any hassle.
So it was awkward, but it worked out. Anita, thank you very much. Really appreciate your story. Aaron, Gloria, Ryan, how do we change policies like this or attitudes like this and still have clubs that can bring people in and persuade them to pay a great deal of money for things like bottle service?
Well, I think that one way that they can kind of get around being completely superficial and making people's vacations or night outs into bad experiences, I think that one thing they can do is just have a formal dress code. That way, that's kind of upscale. If people want to come into the club, they have to be dressed up. And then you'll see people that maybe are all different shapes and sizes, but they're all taking
care
of themselves.
But they all look good. Yeah, forgive me. Erin Gloria Ryan, forgive me, but we're up against the clock, so I'm afraid we have to let you go. But thank you so much. Erin Gloria Ryan is news editor Jezebel. Stephanie Johnson is a professor at the Business School at University of Colorado Denver. And E.C. Gladstone, travel writer and food critic, thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dave.